afternoon on the East Coast, good morning on the West Coast, and a great day to you wherever, and oh, by the way, whenever you may be listening. My name is Jason Dyson. This is The Power of Performance, the show that asks the question, if your brand were a band, would you leave the audience wanting more? We found out last week, her brand leaves me wanting more. Her name is Heather Anderson. Hey, Heather, how are you with the CU Times?
I'm fantastic, Jason. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, Troy is studying for his PhD finals. As you can imagine, it's a really, really big deal. And this dude is...
I can't imagine.
Speaking of ultra-perfectionists, we're going to talk to one. We got two parts of the show today. Obviously, Heather, I look at Twitter. We follow a lot of the same people. We're in the same marketplace. It is all NCUA, all RBC, all the time, and you've got a special guest to talk about it.
I certainly do. I brought along the CU Times Washington reporter, Nick Balassi, to talk a little bit about what credit unions can expect tomorrow when the NCUA board releases its revised risk-based capital rule. So welcome, Nick. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Nick.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Absolutely.
So Nick, we are looking at something a little different tomorrow for coverage. How are things going to be different tomorrow at the NCUA?
Well, normally the NCUA doesn't allow video recording from the press inside the room for the meetings every month, but tomorrow they're opening it up to cameras. So the deliberations will be recorded by the press on video, which is a little different. And we'll get to, you know, have the video up on our website and not have to wait for the agency to put it out themselves. They put out their internal video about a month after the board meeting actually happens.
So what kind of exciting things might we see on this video?
Well, it looks like there will be very significant changes according to what Chairman Matz has said up to this point. Some of the changes will include risk weights, changes to some of the risk weights, and also a longer implementation period. In terms of some of the specifics, it's been difficult to kind of get those out of the agency. They can't.
Sure.
You know, they've been pretty quiet about that. But we're expecting big changes. As a matter of fact, I asked Chairman Matz, will the industry receive this proposal well, in your opinion? You think it will be well received? And she said absolutely. So we'll see what happens.
We'll see.
To her credit, it's my understanding that the changes we can expect to see in this rule are exactly what the industry has asked for, other than the number one question, can't we just table it and not have it at all?
Well, that's a good point, Heather. I mean, The trade seem to be still saying this is a fix that should come from Congress. If you're going to change capital standards and the requirements for credit unions, it should be done legislatively. They still seem to be pushing that narrative, but at this point, I think that ship has sailed because the agency is reproposing the rule. They're putting it out for comment again. They've revised it. If there really are significant changes, like the chairman saying, I think pushing for Congress to do something on this, that could happen maybe in the future, but the rule is still going to go forward.
I wanted to ask real quick, because this has been, obviously, we talked about this a lot on the show, and I always tell people that it's fun doing the show. We have a lot of fun on the show, but credit unions got some real legitimate things to deal with each and every day. What do you think the reaction is going to be in the credit union marketplace?
I think they will appreciate the changes that have been made compared to the last proposal, because I mean, if you were at the listening sessions, you heard concerns from CEOs of credit unions across the country about the risk weights, in particular interest rate risk and other issues that the industry or that the agency is addressing. So I think those changes, they'll be pleased with the fact that it's not the same as the original proposal, and they'll have a chance to comment again, which is what a lot of CEOs were pushing for all along in this process. In terms of whether they'll embrace the new requirements, new capital requirements, I think that is still something that a lot of credit unions are going to be struggling with.
Does anyone ever embrace a new regulation?
That's the point that the chairman has made. And I mean, it's a fair point that whenever there's a regulation that comes out, Board Member Metzger has said the same thing. You know, no one really says, oh, great, you know, more regulations, at least in the, leadership of financial institutions. They don't really embrace it. But I think compared to the last proposal, I think they'll be, you know, a little more satisfied with this one when it comes out.
One more question for you, Nick. Any idea at this point if Board Member McWaters will vote yes or if we're going to see fireworks?
Well, I found out that he did not get the proposal until New Year's Eve. He did not see the board action memorandum. He didn't see the whole rule until New Year's Eve. So he's still going through it. He's still reviewing it. He's comparing it to the first rule because he wasn't on the board when the first rule was proposed. So I'm sure he's looking over that. Then he's looking over this new revised proposal and making up his mind of what he's going to do. So it's still up in the air of how he's going to vote. But either way, I think we'll see Board Member Metzger and Chairman Matz vote yes. So it looks like it'll go through regardless of how he votes.
Yeah. The chairman has the two votes that she needs, but. You know, the first two board meetings that I've attended with Board Member McWaters have been a bit contentious. He's not afraid to speak up when he doesn't agree with something, and makes for good TV, folks. So tune into Credit Union Time to watch that video.
You're right. He's not.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like
he's not
really
afraid.
Cool. Yeah, well, listen, that is so cool. I know you guys will be tweeting it up and sending out the links. If people want to see this, they're not going to find it hard to get a hold of tomorrow. Hey, Nick, thank you so much for joining us. Like I said to Head last week, this is not my forte. The legislative stuff, the regulatory stuff is not my – I never spoke on it. I never consulted on it. But I know it's an important part of the credit union marketplace, and I always appreciate the way you guys cover it. Thank you so very, very much.
Thanks,
no
Jason.
Problem. Thanks for having us.
Talk to you very, very soon. Little bit of drama tomorrow, Heather. Kind of fun. Makes for an interesting Thursday.
Oh, my goodness. It's only January, and we already have the story of the year, so it'll be hard to top that one.
Well, speaking of, like I said, this is not our forte. In the credit union marketplace, we're more associated with the fun stuff, the radio show and the live performances that we put on. And, of course, you're no stranger to our guest today, master violinist and studio owner, Nick Van Wyk is going to join us. He's going to talk to us about music and performance and, you know, making this the year to really reimagine what you do and reverberate with your audience. We have traveled many miles together, and in all those travels, the number one question that comes up, especially when Scott McKenna is with us, who started this show with me, by the way, 6 years ago, is how did you guys meet? We'll talk about that. We'll talk to Nick, and we'll do it all right after this. It's a beautiful suburban day here in New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof. He's been here many times. He is my good friend, Nick Van Wyk. Hey, buddy, how are you?
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, depending on where you're at.
I mean, how many radio shows? How many radio shows can say they've got three time zones covered, Heather?
That's very true.
Yeah,
especially, and I hear you talking about the wonderful, beautiful weather down there. I'm very jealous. It's still a beautiful day. It's just overcast, so I can't see the beautiful day, but it's beautiful out
there. Where are you located?
Depending on the day, I'm either in my studio in New York or I'm in my studio in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Today I'm out in Pennsylvania.
Oh, see, I just moved from Washington, D.C. to Southern California, so
You
don't get him started.
Well, I will come visit you a number of times. Put it that way.
You sure can. Yeah.
Since we met, Anike has consistently talked about wanting to move to Southern California. So that's kind of funny. Hey, listen, to answer the question that we get so much, how did we meet? The short answer, and one day we'll do a show just on this, but the shorter answer is way back, way back. In 2008, Educators Credit Union, Racine, Wisconsin, they had an all-employee training day on President's Day in February of 2008, and their speaker canceled on them late in the previous year. So they called me, they hired me, and I said, I've got kind of this crazy idea. I'd heard about these musicians through a friend in the credit union marketplace. I said, would you let me come out there and bring these musicians with me? It's not going to cost you anything extra, but I think it would be a really cool way to jazz up the meeting. And I had met Scott once. I had never met Nike until the morning before the event. We were at the Super 8 Motel in Racine, Wisconsin. I walked down the room. I shook Nike's hand. I got to know Scott a little bit, and I said, I'll talk, you play. See you tomorrow morning at 8. So the reality is there is no story. It just happened.
it was quite a shock to me because, you know, I was no stranger to traveling and to performing in different areas. But coming into the credit union industry, I actually had no prior knowledge or prior experience working with credit unions. So I had a very fast learning curve, we'll say that, because I, you know, basically we were thrown in front of 300 people in the middle of Wisconsin, which, by the way, I think there was 6 feet of snow on the floor when we got there, and it was still snowing.
It was
talking about warm weather, but that was very much it. It was my first time meeting Jason. Like he said, he had a chance to get to know Scott and the businesses surrounding Scott prior to my arrival, and it was very much just, hey, I'm going to have the presentation, I'm going to talk, and then we're going to throw it to you and we'll play. And eventually what happened into our performance is the first one went off phenomenally. In fact, they had asked for encore, so we ended up playing even further into a morning event. Yep. So Scott and myself ended up playing a number of songs during lunch hour to keep everybody entertained. And then I think it was a couple weeks later, we were all invited. Jason had invited us out to join him for the Prime Alliance out in Seattle, where we very soon started to realize that we had something special. And instead of us just coming as an entertainment value, you know, Generation Y was a very hot topic at that point, and Jason's presentations were of the, you know, how to relate to different generations, so his generational speak. So we became the example of Generation Y, starting off with, I remember a question, we were I think we were in Texas at this point, and somebody asked, hey, Scott, how did you choose, you know, which credit union or which, you know, bank you were going to use? And he said, I am a member of a credit union, but I've never stepped foot in it. His father had signed him up.
That's right.
Yeah, so he had done all of his banking with the credit union online, but he also had a mouth-dropping moment for everybody in the credit union world where he said, my primary banking, he said, I have my loans, my car loans, my everything through the credit union, but my primary banking is done with Bank of America, because at that point it was the only bank that had a mobile application for an iPhone. So that was kind of a jaw-dropping moment where most of Jason's power of performance presentations, he talks about how you are what you used to be. So your style is, if you grew up in the 70s, you know, you're still going to have those dreams of, you're going out to the disco or having the cars with the 8-track players he likes to talk about, which I think is a very, very important point, is you will always be who you were. And at the same time, you don't want to let that fade, but you also want to be able to kind of scoop up the technology at hand. I've, you know, grew up in an area which had no orchestra, had no, you know, technology for me to play violin. I worked with an orchestra outside of my town, and as I grew up, I started interning in a studio in Montclair, New Jersey, and I would drive back and forth just to be able to utilize those tools. And I'm playing an instrument that's been around forever. So I found a way to take an instrument that's very traditional, and it's something that I've been able to, you know, work with my whole life, but I've been able to adapt to it. Now I have an electric violin where I can plug in with studio tools, and, you know, instead of old analog tape, now we're using digital conversions and things like that. So still very much using what I grew up with and being who I was my whole life, but utilizing the tools of today to connect with people of different generations. So I can still play the classical music that, you know, is very influential to, you know, the older generation, I play the rock music. I love playing, you know, Eric Clapton stuff with some of the guys I play with. And then I play some Dave Matthews for the Y Generation. And then I've even gotten involved with electronic music, where I'm playing with DJs in Mexico every year for New Year's Eve. So
that's right.
It's a little bit of everything, being able to relate to the different generations and use the tools at your disposal.
You do such an excellent job at that. Now, did you have a mentor or someone who was doing the sort of work that you emulated, or did you just kind of create your sound on your own?
Well, there was always a mentor involved. There was always, you know, when I'd grown up, like I said, there was no string program in the school I grew up in, New York. So I had a private tutor, a private instructor, I should say, who I started to learn how to play violin from. I stuck with her for many years until my family moved to Bethlehem. And that's the connection between the two cities. I grew up in New York, but we moved my freshman year of high school to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So there was always an instructor involved. By the time I was in high school, I had switched over to a little bit more of Celtic and Irish. So my basis was always in classical and Celtic music. But I always grew up listening to Jethro Tull and U2 and Dire Straits. So I was always a big rock fanatic. And then the studio that I worked in was an R&B studio.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. I want to ask you about the studio. The name of the show is Studio Quality. It's it's not just that you do so much stuff with the electric violin. And Heather, he does have a very unique sound. I have a lot of Nike's music on my iPod. I listen to it almost every single day. That song this time is one of my favorite instrumental songs ever. But you also now help other musicians commit their art to a recordable format in the Six Wheel Studios. Tell us about Six Wheel Studios.
Absolutely. Six Wheel Studios was founded a couple years ago with my partner, Anthony Melillo, and I have another partner here in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, who's my head engineer. His name is John Rupp, and he's actually very, very, you know, he's prominent in his field. He's front of house engineer, so he goes out with a band called Boyce Avenue, another band called Second Hand Serenade. Most people know who Everclear is. He's gone out on tour, and he's their front-of-house engineer, so he's the one who's actually mixing the live shows. When he's not out there, he's here with us running the studio here in Bethlehem. So what we did was the original reason we wanted to open the studio, because studios are kind of a dying breed at this point. A lot of people have the ability. Like I said, you use the tools at your disposal. A lot of musicians are able to go out, buy a MacBook and an interface, and be able to plug in with a little bit of software. And you're able to create music right there and be able to put your art into a recordable format. So what we wanted to do was create a studio, which we like to, our motto is artists for artists. So we are a studio of musicians who know the field, know how to not only record, but also how to point you in the correct direction of how to build and improve upon your craft and be able to, you know, digitally as well as physically distribute your music to the masses, and also be able to kind of tap into some of the commercial markets as well. But we're more of a coaching studio, and we have the ability, we have all the top-end gear, so stuff that you won't really have the ability to go buy out if you're just a college student, and we can teach you how to utilize that and work with it.
Very cool.
Yep. Are we going to get to listen to any of this music?
We'll get you some.
He's just fantastic, and I have some folks that are listening in. So friends of mine
YouTube,
who are musicians.
Here's what I would do, if
it's okay with you guys. Maybe Jason and I have talked about this in the past. We'll set up a live feed in one of my recording studios. And we'll schedule a time either on air or after a radio show, and maybe we can take it from there. And we'll just go into a live video stream.
Yeah.
Wow, that'd be crazy.
Yeah. Heather, honestly, one of the reasons, not the only reason, I've always wanted to do a show with all three of us. It's just time. I mean, there's only 11 minutes left in the show as it is.
Sure.
but it's the kind of thing that we could talk about again and again. But one of the reasons is we're going to be doing some very, very cool stuff this year with music and live music and live performances. Even though many, many years when I would make early reservations for these guys, for Scott and Nike, a lot of times you have to pick the year they were born for Southwest Airlines. Of course, I'd scroll down, you know, a couple times. Well, then I would have to pick mine. And it's like, man, it takes a long time to get back to 1967. even though we have – a real generational difference. Nice and I love a lot of the same music. We get along musically. We connect in a lot of not everything. I didn't get the latest the band you like, Coldplay, but you know how it is. That's music. that's the thing about music. It's something to everybody. But we're going to be doing a lot of cool stuff. He agrees with me, despite the difference in age and despite the difference. He is a musical performer. I use my voice to do what I do. But we both have that in common, that we want to preside over the end of the webinar and the terrible on-hold music and just, again, reimagine and reverberate when you know, my wife logs into a call every morning for a huge healthcare company, and the on-hold music while you're waiting for that call to start, it would drive you crazy, and you have to listen to it because you're there logged into – I run upstairs. I can't take it. I run upstairs and close the door to my studio. So we are looking forward to doing
it. That's what I was saying. I mean, like, obviously, you know, when you relate your tools to your different generations and who you are, I mean, what you hear when you pick up the phone and you're sitting there on hold says a lot about your credit union, who you're trying to reach. Right. If you're trying to reach those older generations, then, yes, of course, you're going to have some of the older music. If you're trying to bring in, you know, a younger crowd, you kind of want to be a little bit more, you know, in the trend, and you want to make the trend your friend. So music and art is always an expression of what you want to convey to people.
And this is what's kind of funny, Heather. I you may have heard me say on the show last year, I upgraded my technology bit here for the radio show. I have a MacBook Air that I use to do the radio show. And Nick's going to be like, it's so easy to do what you need to do. I haven't moved all my music and stuff to this, so I could upload something to his right now, but I don't want to take the chance that I would mess up the live feed. listen, seriously, though, Heather, I will get you he's happy to share some. It is great stuff. It is very, very enjoyable. Yep. But no, when we do this, we want to do it the right way.
I just want to stress to listeners, phenomenal. You performed at the Credit Union Times Trailblazer Award reception last year at GAC, and my jaw dropped.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
It's just beautiful. And folks, if you're looking for him, his name is spelled NYKE.
Yes.
So
you can follow him on Twitter simply at NYKE.
I just did.
Oh, you just did. That's cool.
Well, and to tie into what we were originally trying to speak about here too, is I very much appreciate the accolades and your kind words, and you know, it's when I first met Jason, that was all I considered myself was just a violinist, just to come and perform and entertain. And I think between our relationships and us all working together and meeting many people in the credit union industry, we learned how it's not always just about what you expect, you know, when you're going into something, but it's what you come out with. And working in the credit union industry, working with all of you, we've definitely been able to create a better relationship to tie in, you know, how does music really relate to people, and how can, when we did our power presentations, how you can take what we do in the music industry, such as keeping cables nice and clean and presentation and what it looks like.
Exactly.
Because when you're coming to a performance, you're going to hear the music, but if you came to a performance and saw cables and ties and everything everywhere, you're going to go, hey, it sounds great, but it doesn't look that great. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm so glad you reminded me of that. Hey, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We're probably going to go into bonus time. I mean, the show, if you're listening live, the show will cut off at the bottom of the hour, but you can listen back, jump right back to where you were in the podcast. You can get it on iTunes. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this.
Man, when I'm listening to The Power of Performance, I just can't decide who's hotter, Jason or Troy.
Tough question.
You can't tell by the way I use my voice. I'm a woman, man. No time to talk.
Actually, based upon our guest, Troy is up by two. And Knight can't help me because we do not ask our male guests to vote on that question that has stumped mankind and humanity. Lo, these many.
I will say, Jason, I think you're a very fantastic dresser. But when I finally had the chance to meet Troy, it was just this past May. I've met him a number of times over the phone, but he's a very nice dresser. He dresses to impress.
Guy.
I will put it that way.
And folks, And folks, if you ever get to meet him in person, I know he has that sort of AM radio personality on this show, and that's genuine, by the way. He is simply one of the nicest guys I ever came across in my many travels. You said something before the break, and like I said, Heather, I hope you can hang on through the bottom
I
of the hour,
because
I'm fascinated by this. This is something I don't sometimes do. I do it every single time I get ready to do the Power Performance Radio Show, the show that asks the question, if your brand were a band, would you leave the audience wanting more? I make sure everything is perfectly placed. I could literally almost do the show with my eyes closed. I have
right.
everything exactly where
it's like
needs
I've
to
seen
be.
Him do the performance, the Power Performance with his eyes closed. It's quite fascinating.
You see me do a lot of things with my eyes closed. But seriously, it is a big deal. We've had technical problems during the show.
Oh, yeah.
Our biggest show of the year last year, Heather, Jim Blaine, when he came on to talk about risk-based capital, by the way, there were so many people listening on hold, meaning you can call this show and listen to it on hold. We don't even advertise that. There were so many people listening on hold that the intro wouldn't fire, the Tom Sawyer wouldn't fire. And so I thought, well, if I'm losing the internet connection, I need to call in and do the show as a guest by unmuting the microphone. And then I realized I can't even scroll down far enough to do that. But I turned immediately and looked exactly where the phone was. And it's because every single time, and that was the number one first lesson I learned from Scott and Ike. They were meticulous before they ever played a single note. And there is tremendous business metaphorical value in that statement.
Yes. I feel like the preparation you take before any event, whether it's a musical performance, whether it's art, whether it's a board meeting, whether it's a meeting in front of your members or even, you know, just any type of event that you go into, you want to make sure not only are you prepared with your content, but the presentation itself. You know, and this is going back to the basics with anything. I mean, if you go into an interview and you're dressed in torn jeans and a T-shirt, and the guy next to you has a smaller resume but is dressed to impress and you know has a full-on suit and his hair slicked back, who do you think is going to have a better chance at the position that he's trying to get hired for? It's the same thing in music. Yeah, if you go out and you see two bands, and one band, everybody has the dance moves down, if you can dance. I can't really dance, so I'm not going to go there. But, you know, if they have the dance moves down, if they're all dressed, if the cables are all lined together, so when you look at the stage, you don't see spaghetti of wires going all over the place. And then the next band comes on, and even if they're a better performing band, but, you know, I hate to say it because musicians were all about the sound and the music and the content, but I mean, most people can relate, you know, with aesthetics and things looking nice. And then you get the sound also. And, you know, regardless, and what I like to say is, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've played a performance. And in the back of my mind, I'm going, oh, I screwed up that note, or I didn't come in at the right time, or I didn't do this. But the person who's coming to see you doesn't always know where your faults and your mistakes are during the performance. They're just getting the big overall picture. And if the big overall picture is fantastic, they're not going to mind about the little missed notes here and that. So that's where I can tie in. Yeah, so when it comes to the banking and the credit union world, I don't know all the ins and outs. I don't know, as Jason was saying before, like the legislation decisions, and I don't know, you know, necessarily how the ins and outs of banking works all the time. But if I walk into that branch or if I'm online and I want to, you know, make a deposit and the attitude that I'm greeted with when I get to the front desk there, or the counter, I should say, or when something goes wrong online, I can call in a customer service. The reaction that I get there, that's still, as Jason would put it, in the old World War II generation, that handshake that you get when you first walk in still means a lot to people, but you still have to be able to have the right content, have the right performance, and use the right tools. You know, somebody's not going to go into a credit union banking world saying, oh, we have free checks, but we don't do online banking. Or it's going to cost you $40 every time you take a wire transfer. You know what I mean?
Here's something to ponder. And as a member of, you know, the millennial generation, you probably have others. Credit unions are struggling with how to implement that handshake feeling digitally when you're digitally serving members.
Yep. And
what do you like to see
I think it still, again, comes back to the basis. Yes, the internet is your friend and it's your tool. Don't be scared by it. But if you don't have a personal relationship with the members of your bank or credit union, again, it's still going to mean nothing that you're utilizing those tools. You still need to go out and prospect, whether it be, I don't know how great television commercials are anymore, but you don't want to try to flock people to like your Facebook page because, honestly, people in my generation and younger aren't really interested in following, businesses and things like that. Maybe only if you're putting out some kind of promotional, giveaway or something like that. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. I don't think there's a lot of weight, and it's a good thing to have. Again, use it as a tool. But too many people, not only in the banking world, but in all industry, I feel like puts too much weight into social media sometimes. Yep. Again, I think it's a very strong tool and it should be utilized. But when you go out, how are you getting people to come to the social media? How are you getting people to come to your digital? If you're just putting it out there, like for me, if I just put up an advertisement for my studio and just keep it completely Facebook related. Yes, I can pay, I think they have like a minimum of a $10 fee or marketing advertisement to try to get more likes and things like that. But the content needs to be there first. So they need to be able to see photos. They need to see what are you doing? What are you offering? If I'm just going to have a digital relationship with you, that's great. But the content needs to be there. You have to have photos. You have to have videos. You have to have music. You have to let the people see online, oh, this isn't just a bank. This is a great time. Unfortunately, I hate to say it because, our generation is portrayed as almost the party generation. And we like to be.
Yeah, young people never party. How odd.
And honestly, Heather, but Nike is not that guy. He was never the crazy party animal.
He was our
designated driver after all.
Yeah, I like to pride myself that I am not not your stereotypical musician.
He is not at all. I think you answered Heather's question very, very definitively. And of course I could be wrong. As I said last week, I come from the smallest generation. I don't always assume my opinion matters, Heather, but I don't know that credit unions need to worry about shaking hands with Gen Y and the millennials and Generation X.
Well, what I was getting at was my credit union is here in Southern California. I just spent the last 3 years in Washington, D.C., but still kept my credit union. So I access them entirely with remote digital channels. Now, that's not as personal, and you miss cross-selling opportunities. So, I mean, would a credit union need, online live chat as an option to really...
Yeah, well, I think, and what I mean even by the physical handshake, I don't necessarily mean it. I was using the physical handshake as an example from how Jason used to relate the World War II generation to the banking and just industrial, needs and commercial needs, but you still have to have somewhat of a digital handshake. It can't just be like, hey, I did marketing. I put up a picture of, us and the name of the bank on Facebook, and we're on Facebook. If you go out for musicians, there are so many musicians out there who are now uploading videos of them playing cover songs or of them putting their own work out there. But the ones that are actually getting, the return on their time, I don't want to say return on investment, but return on their time that they put into making the videos and uploading them, are the ones that keep people entertained. But also, for instance, there's a band called Boyce Avenue that my engineer works with. They are the highest paid, I think almost any music subscriber or uploader on YouTube. They're actually paid by Google and YouTube for being content uploaders onto YouTube.
Yeah.
And what they do is they started off as a couple brothers in Florida, and they made very, very clean cut, nice, basically covers of very well-known popular songs. And what they did was they made nice, clean versions of them, mostly acoustic breakdown versions, and songs that people are searching in real time now, like songs that are popular now as well as songs that were popular in the past. And what they did was they took video, everything was clean, they did the recording beforehand and synced up the video to it, so everything looked phenomenal, and the performance that you got was pristine. Yeah. And they did that, and they put in a very clean atmosphere, and a very, you know, like, as they started to get, you know, a little more well-known, the videos started to get a little bit more intricate, more time, more video camera options and things like that. And you look at them now, they upload a video, it's over 10 million views overnight.
Yeah, so, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Heather, it's a whole new landscape out there that even me, somebody who prides himself on keeping up with trends and technology, the behavior, there's a whole world out there. I mean, you know, my 14-year-old tax deduction, everything starts with YouTube. There is no ABC, NBC, CBS. Everything starts there. That is the channel that was left on when you turned off the Curtis Mathis last night at 10 o'clock, circa 1978, at my home down in Converse, Texas. It is an entirely new world. And we're going to do
this way, too.
My 3-year-old will watch it for hours.
Yeah. I don't think the actual in-person physical handshake will ever go away. Now, there's other tools to utilize because, like you said, if you're in California but you're still banking with your credit union in D.C., then you are also a loyal customer at that point. I think that's what's more important is creating that actual relationship, that handshake one way or another, that even if you are in a different location, you are still loyal to the brand that you are with because they
listen
to you.
I wouldn't say I'm loyal as much as I'm lazy. You know, I'm very sticky. Everything is on auto pay. Everything.
Yeah, but that's part of it too, though. And that's my point. I think banking is a – and I want to come back to one last question about music before we let Knight go, because I know, trust me, we're well into bonus time. I knew we were going to be – I should have set it up for 45 minutes. I know myself. When Knight and I get talking, it can go on for a while.
We go on through the night for conversations. And I'm always happy to come back if you ever want me.
Well, and we're going to. And by the way, we're going to have Scott on, who's very much into that the video stuff as well. That's the beautiful thing about the radio show. We're on every Wednesday. And if we wanted to do a special show this Friday afternoon, we could do it. We're not working off any template for a webinar schedule here at Eloquent Online. Anyway, before we get to that last question, you said something about, I think credit unions have the need to be more creative in the way they do things. I meant it when I said I want to preside over the end of the webinar, which, by the way, is still spell checked. When I use that spelling on my Word documents, notes, and email, we want to do things differently. Just as an aside, one of the things that kept us going, we didn't have meetings. We played online first-person shooter video games. And you never met three more competitive dudes. And those were some of the best creative moments that we had. Not in a U-shaped classroom with flip charts and stuff like that, but just shooting at each other with high-powered rifles in a virtual battlefield. So anyway, yeah, we're going to do a lot of cool stuff this year when it comes to banking and things like that. There's a whole conversation we could have about that digital handshake. They have one at GT Financial. They've got those teller machines where you touch the screen and a live person is talking to you from the headquarters in downtown Tampa. Okay, last thing as we get to music. You're a professional musician. You make your living by recording music and playing music. What are some of the big shows you have going on earlier this year?
I just came back from Mexico for New Year's Eve. It's the fourth year I do that every year. We perform down in Playa del Carmen at the Paradisus Resort.
Ooh, ole.
It's a tough life he leads. I'm telling you.
Well, January is always, I'm not sure how it is in typical business, but in the music and entertainment business, January and February are always kind of quiet because it's after all the holidays. You know, you get that big rush in the holiday season. You get a big rush in the summertime festival. Things are a little quiet up until about, St. Patrick's Day and after that. So there's a couple great local performances. I have a couple performances in arenas for up in Wilkes-Barre. Pennsylvania, also in New York. This year, I've already got a tour with one of the gentlemen who I play with. We're bringing 65 people over to Italy with us. We're doing a wine tasting tour where we perform our second night. So the first night we arrive in Italy, the second night we have a rooftop performance in Rome. And then the next day we have another performance in a winery. So yeah, we have it's a week and a half tour. We did that also 2 years ago in Ireland. So we had an Ireland tour where we did the same thing. We brought 60-some odd people over with us. So I'll also be back in Mexico in May for performances down at another resort down there. So, but this time more rock and based. So there's a lot of fun, exciting things coming on. What I'm most excited about is what we have going on at the studio, bringing on some wonderful new artists who we're working with and who I've had the privilege to not only help, but sometimes even coach and direct. And then also the ability that we have coming with the studios. We're also in talks about possibly opening up a third studio in Stamford, Connecticut. And my goal is one day to finally get one down in that Southern California and I can come hang out.
Yeah.
With
Come on down.
Hey, listen, I know we kept you. I know I promised you, you'll be finished by 20 after the hour. And here it is, 20 minutes till the hour. Listen, I don't get to say this to a lot of people on the air, but you are one of my dearest and closest friends. It's always so much fun to talk to you, even on the radio show. I'm not just a friend, I'm a fan. Heather, the second they started that morning in Racine, Wisconsin, I mean, It was by the eighth measure, I was like the old cartoon, the Bugs Bunny cartoon where the guy finds the singing frog. I mean, I had the dollar signs dancing over the top of my head. You know, it was just, I knew that
I
we were on to something.
I was the cartoon with the jaw on the floor.
Yeah.
We've had some fantastic years together, but I must agree, you are, you're one of my best friends. I consider you family. I've seen his son grow up. To the point where we were cool, and then one day we showed up at his school, and it was like, hey, I don't know you guys. We were uncool for a moment, but then we did a performance at his school. We were cool again, so it was great.
He's got to keep up with me, and it's hard being the son of the coolest dad in the school. I mean, it is. It's so cool. Hey, listen, brother.
No, we've had some fantastic times. I think we've all learned a lot from each other. And I know it's not ending here. I know we only have greatness ahead of us. So.
Hey, listen, brother, you take care out there. Stay warm. I'll talk to you very soon, like this afternoon.
You too. I can't wait to see you all again, whether it's in Texas, California.
All right. Heather, we are into crazy, uncharted bonus territory time. But, you know, you talk about jaw-dropping moments. We've got it all covered here today on the show. Listen, I know the NCUA stuff is important, and I get that. And I know you guys are all over it. But when we get that figured out, still what all credit unions talk about, engaging that next generation, doing cool and creative training for their employees. Now, you tell me, Heather, if I said to you, we're going to bring some of that excitement and energy from his musical performances into the training world of the credit union marketplace, that's got to be at least as good as the latest webinar.
You know, it's funny you should say that. My old credit union hired an opera singer once for an all-staff training day, and it was exciting and fun. And yeah, I think that I personally, if I had a credit union and I was planning my annual meeting and didn't have any entertainment, I would book him in a heartbeat.
Well, and what we're going to do, and of course, he can't be, there's only one of him, there's only one of me, there's only one of Scott.
Yeah.
We realize we can't be everywhere, but I can remember back when I was, you know, he said he's going to Rome. Gosh, it's been 10 years since I was in Rome. I was there for the World Council event back in 2005. And, you know, no Facebook, no Twitter, no LinkedIn. It was just you and your business cards out there trying to make a living. I've always told him, I said, had we met in 2005, they would have already enshrined us into the Credit Union Hall of Fame. But, you know, it's history. We got going in the middle of the recession. But I understand that, you know, credit unions got legitimate things to take care of. When the NCUA examiners show up, they don't care that you had an opera singer at your all-employee event. But we know that we're going to deliver a very entertaining, well-timed, relevant, and entertaining training option that people don't have to get in their car and drive or get on a plane spend thousands of dollars.
Well, yeah. I mean, who wants to, you know, come to work on Veterans Day or whenever credit unions hold these day-long
and
events?
We've done a lot of those.
And do the old, you know, fall backwards and let your coworker fall, talk to your routine.
Oh.
I mean, you gotta do something to engage and excite and motivate and And I think music is an excellent idea, Jason. I think it that's a great way to engage your younger employees.
Many, many times, both internally and externally. Music is the ultimate multi-generational and multicultural language of our humanity. You guys go out there and look up Nike, N-Y-K-E. You'll find them on YouTube, Six Wheel Studios, S-I-X-W-I-L-L Studios. Just watch the quality in everything and, of course, the quality of the music. You know, that's the one thing we didn't really get to talk about. You know, it's – Heather, it's I make a lot of jokes. I know I come off as a guy that can be a little headstrong and arrogant at times, but the stuff we did was insanely better than the alternatives going on in the other rooms and in the other breakout sessions. And we've got a body.
The first time I saw you, presented your generations presentation at my credit union, and I remember
what credit union
being stunned. At the time, it was called FAA First Federal Credit Union.
I remember
California. This. We had a
and
brand new building.
And you had like a yoga thing, like a wellness.
That was the year we had the opera singer, too. Yeah, and we had yoga.
I don't remember the opera singer for some reason.
Oh, she was loud. I don't know how you could have missed her. But maybe she was on like later in the day because I think you were right
at the
beginning. But I remember thinking – you had a PowerPoint presentation, and it had actual animation, and it was good animation, and you had video, and all you had to do was just push play and step back, and it would happen. And I thought to myself, I hate that guy. How much money is he making just sitting there pressing play on the same?
And on that particular day, $2,500, but that business dried up really fast in the recession.
You really inspired me to think of different ways to use my strengths and talents to make a living.
The music was always first and foremost. In fact, the whole reason I even agreed to pursue Scott in Nike is at that very moment, I had been looking at all my evaluations over the years, and the number one, you know, negative comment, if you can call it a negative comment, is that you don't talk about yourself. Okay, you're U.S. Army, Desert Storm veteran, you're this many years old, but I didn't tell stories about my family or myself and stuff like that. And so I thought about putting together this PowerPoint. I know Nike is laughing on the other line because they introduced me to Keynote and a billion other technological things that were so much better than what I was using. But I wanted to put together this PowerPoint with three songs that kind of defined my life. And the first one was Smooth Operator by Sade. Because when I was in high school, I thought you could, you know, date a girl at one high school and date another girl at another high school because there was no Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. And my girlfriend since middle school was like, you jerk. And you could do what was called song dedications in the student newspaper. And so she dedicated Smooth Operator to me in my seat. And so I was going to just like play these songs and talk about like an audio biography of why I loved these songs. And it just kind of kept evolving into wanting to do more. I did see somebody at Randolph Brooks Federal Credit Union. She would come in and entertain the new employees, and she would sing a cappella, and she was brilliant. I thought maybe I could use her in not lip sync, but karaoke the smooth. I mean, it's like, well, how are you going to get a 23-year-old girl to travel with you to conventions, you know, and have to, you know, pay for hotel rooms and second tickets and stuff like that? And that was probably in 2006. So it was 2 years I was thinking about how to do this, how to incorporate live music into the spoken performance, because I was honestly getting tired of doing it by myself. And I knew that being the guy with the music in the slides and the video wasn't going to keep you in business forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, meeting Scott and Mike, clearly the only reason I survived the Great Recession. It was simply the most important professional meeting.
I'm glad you did, friend.
Yeah, we talk so much about preparation. The thing that got it all started was almost no preparation. It was just like I talk, you play, and it was just one of those awesome things. Hey, listen, thank you for staying long. I know we went 50 minutes here, and I said it was a 30-minute show, but there are some quotes.
No worries.
If just listen to Nike as a late 20-something-year-old potential member of your credit union, and it's worth the time to tune in. Hey, listen, folks, Heather, thank you again for jumping in. Troy's getting ready for his PhD finals. Very, very absorbed in that, and I appreciate you joining us from the West Coast. You have a great, great week
you
out there. We'll be keeping an eye on everything with you tomorrow. I will be all over Twitter
thank
for you,
you
guys tomorrow.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate that. We
all
will
right.
not
hey,
disappoint.
Hey, I know you won't. Everybody else, make it a great week. You've been listening to The Power Performance, the show that asks the question, if your brand were a band, would you leave the audience wanting more in our sixth calendar year? Gosh, we've been on the air longer than Arrested Development, one of my favorite shows. Heather, I'm sorry, real quick. I have lost interest in Sons of Anarchy. I stopped watching it.
You did?
I did.
Why?
We'll have to talk about that. Let me think okay. about it. We'll talk about it next week. We have one more week without Troy. We'll talk about it after Martin Luther King break next week. Hey, listen, have a great week. I'll talk to you very, very soon.
Thanks, Jason. Have a great week, too.
Everybody else, sorry we went long. Talk to you next week.
That's all, folks.